The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Good afternoon. You are joining We the People Radio with Aaron Ryan.
And Bill Cundiff.
And Bob Martin.
Oh my gosh, we've got that down.
That's frightening.
I know. And for those of you who don't know, it's funny, listen to, I don't know, last week and every week before that. Oh my gosh. Well,
I think we had it down last week.
We kind of did. We were creeping up on it. So let's see. This week, we're going to chat about activism. And, you know, some people think that activism is, I don't know. They don't see it as patriotic. I think activism's super patriotic, actually. And considering where some of our policies and things in our country are going, I think it's the only route to go. But there's a fine line between activism and just, I don't know, throwing a tantrum, I guess, maybe, for lack of a better description. So we have Catherine Duran on with us this morning, a woman who's not throwing a tantrum. I was expecting to hear her laughing. I'm like, I got nothing for that, Catherine. let's see. What do we have for a bio on you? We have formerly the Northwestern U.S. Regional Director for a Nutritional Supplement and Pharmaceutical Company, a health-related business consultant, and a real estate investor. She's now a full-time activist in the restoration of American liberty, and most importantly, a homeschool mom of a bright 13-year-old son. Realizing she knew little about the education system, discovering the unsettling details of Common Core state standards prompted her to begin researching both sides of the issue. Currently an active opponent, she co-founded Concerned Parents of Elk Grove, whose focus has been research and fact-finding, assembling a collection of evidence regarding the history, foundation, and the key players involved. Oh my gosh, well, the key players involved, that's like a full-time job for a whole bunch of people. Yeah, that's a huge one. So you probably know lots of our friends. I know for sure you know our friend Debbie Bocciacalupi.
Yes, I do.
Which I didn't know when you first called, or when I first called you, or however we did that, because I got connected to you from Louise up there in Yreka, who's been working on this vaccine issue.
That's right. Wonderful Louise.
Wonderful Louise, who is a very productive activist. I guess maybe we'll just add the word productive in front just to differentiate.
That's fantastic.
And for those of you who don't typically tune in to us, you can find us online at wethepeopleradio.us. And on there is great information from Catherine, all sorts of links about her. And I'm in the process of posting the declaration that we'll talk about later. How about that?
Oh, we need to talk about some of her other appearances.
Well, she's had other appearances.
Yes.
Hey, how was it on The Blaze? Okay, sorry, back up. Tell us. I'm like, okay, wait a minute. We're just like assuming everyone knows this. Why were you on The Blaze? Tell us about what started all this.
Well, you know, initially, I was a... Okay, I'm just going to throw it out there. I was a Glenn Beck devotee. I was one of the first subscribers to The Blaze, and when he started a show, after he ended a show on Fox, and I had heard about, he did a show one time in I think sometime in February of 2013, and it was about C-Scope in Texas. And I'm thinking, oh, goodness, wow. You know, my son's in sixth grade. Fifth grade, I think, at the
that's
time.
That's Texas's version of Common Core, is that correct?
That's their version of, yes, it was very similar to Common Core.
Right.
And I thought, well, thank goodness we don't have that here. And a couple weeks later, he had on his show, he did a whole show on Common Core. And I just thought, oh, my gosh, this is really happening. This is really going to happen. And so, you know, rather than getting all hysterical and all that, I just started doing some research. And then...
Didn't you get hysterical?
Did not get hysterical. I don't really like to talk about stuff that I don't know about, so I didn't until I knew something about it. enough about it to that I could back it up. And so I found myself becoming an activist. It just happened. Just one thing after another, it just happened. And I got into a group. We organized a group called Concerned Parents of Elk Grove. And we did that for the purpose initially to start to do a community forum. And we did a community forum here in Elk Grove. And so, you know, we were bringing awareness. We had three proponents, three opponents. It was a great panel. We had 100 people show up. It was really terrific. But everybody went home and pretty much went back to sleep. And so in the that was November of 2013. And then after the holidays, I found out that they were doing benchmark testing at my son's school. Actually, he was in sixth grade at the time. And so I didn't know when he had taken the first set of benchmark tests. They didn't say anything. They didn't tell anything. They didn't say, you know, make sure your kid gets a great breakfast and all the usual stuff that they do before testing. They didn't prep him for it. So and no one knew about my activism or anything at the time. So anyway, when it came time, sometime around February, March, I decided I had developed a very good relationship with the teachers and the principal, and I decided I'd better let them know at some point that my son will be opting out of testing. But before I did that, I made sure that they felt comfortable with me and they didn't think that I was there to, you know, rock their world and, you know, make it a big, you know, disaster and be a thorn in their side and all of that. So they liked me.
Why did you want to opt him out at that point? Did you know what kind of questions they were going to ask?
Well, no, we didn't. I didn't. I just knew that the test is, essentially the test is what drives the curriculum. And being opposed to Common Core as a whole, one of the ways to start shutting that down is to, you know, throw a wrench in the whole process, which would be the testing. So at that time, it didn't even really matter to me what was on the test or any of that. We had no idea because that was the first year of rollout for the test, and we had never seen it before. So East Coast states, I think they had been doing the SBAC and the PARC testing, but we hadn't had any testing out here in California. So no. So I just knew that he was going to be opting out, and I didn't, you know, the data collection is another big, a big issue, and, you know, trying to bring awareness and all that stuff. So I just wanted to make sure that he, was protected from that, and it's, you know, I'm encouraging everyone else to opt out. So eventually I had the conversation with his teacher, and his teacher was thrilled. This was a parent-teacher conference that we had, and I said, so I just want to let you know, I don't know how the teachers feel about Common Core and what's going on with the testing and all that, but, you know, my son Christopher will be opting out of testing. And he just sat there for a second, and he said, awesome. Oh. I wish every parent would do that. I wish the whole school would do that. So I was thrilled. I was so happy that he said that. So a few weeks went by. Still, I was, you know, buddies with the principal and all that. And my son, it got close to testing time, and my son decided that he wanted to be an activist too. And his friends, his classmates, were all complaining about the test prep and all of that, and he said, well, you don't have to take the test. So they found, they were looking at it as a way of getting out of the test, and he thought, this is great, everybody's going to love me. So he begged me for 5 days, Mom, can I please take some opt-out forms? Please let me take some opt-out forms. And I thought, okay, this is great. This is, people are going to skin me alive if they find out that, you know, I sucked my son into this. They're going to look at this, you know, completely, you know, not the way that it actually is. And so I was very reluctant because I knew that there could be some blowback. And but he begged me and he insisted, and I finally relented. So I let him take the forms, and my mom and I were going to take him somewhere after school, so we went to pick him up. And he got in the car, and he looked a little bummed, and I said, so how'd it go today? He says, well, it was all fine until the principal made an announcement on the loudspeaker, and she said, there was inappropriate material handed out, and it needed to be collected. And then she went around to all the classrooms, and this was all of the classrooms, not just his, because he was handing them out at recess, and collected and just essentially
bullied
these kids into giving these opt-out forms that they had received in envelopes back to her. So
no
what
kid.
What were the opt-out forms? Were they these forms that came from you, or was this something that was produced through the Common Core system?
That's a great question. Actually, it's no, not through the Common Core system. No, no. The last thing that they wanted was opt-out. But the Pacific Justice Institute, and you can go, anyone can go to pacificjusticeinstitute.org and download a printable opt-out form and submit that for each child at the beginning of the school year. And anyway, so I had used that form, which, and it was accompanied by a letter, too. I did a sort of an explanatory letter. This school, by the way, is about 95%+ Hispanic. And many, many of the, most of the families, many of the families there, it's English is a second language, so there's a language issue, and I didn't have a Spanish version. So it was important that the kids that had gotten these were the kids, most of them were the kids that were better, I want to say they were higher level students. They were just, they were students that were, their parents would really care. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it had contact information on it and everything so people could get a hold of me to get an explanation and that kind of thing. So I thought it was very important that everybody had an understanding that they had an option and what this was about without, you know, hysteria. And so anyway, it hurt his feelings. You know, he felt really bad, and he thought that he had done something wrong. And I said, okay, well, I'll just pop in real quick and see the principal. So
just pop in and have a chat.
like grown-ups with ideas, yeah. What a great idea.
Let me just go see how she feels about this and, you know, smooth things over for her.
A little school chat.
So I went in, and she made me wait for 5 minutes. And I finally went in and sat down, and she was very upset with me. I can't believe that you pulled your son into this. I'm really very disappointed. And I said, hey, he insisted. This was not something I wanted to do. I just wanted to let you know. You know, he had my full permission to do it. But, you know, he's exercising his right to hand these out to his classmates. And she said, you had no business doing that, and it has to go through the district. And all I really wanted to tell her was, I really don't think you want to prevent him from doing this. I really don't, because I knew that this could turn into a big thing if she did. And I didn't, and she had done such a great job with that school. It was amazing. This was Mark Twain Elementary School. It was scheduled for shutdown. She had been there for a decade, and she had turned this around. She had turned it into a, you know, from a gang-infested, just a pit, to a really wonderful school with great teachers and kids in uniforms, and, you know, they had lots of success. And she should be very proud of herself, and I was very proud of her, too. And so I didn't want this to be blowback on her. So, but she didn't want to hear it, so she just said,
wow.
I'm very uncomfortable with this. We're going to have to end this meeting. And I stood up and reached for the stack of opt-out forms that she had taken from my son, and she slammed her hand down, and I pulled back, and I said, you know, respectfully, I'm going to leave one with you, and I'm taking the rest, because first of all, I pay for those. I produce all of those myself. I do all the letters. I print them from my machine. I pay for that stuff. It costs me a fortune. And I give you one. You can make copies, that kind of thing. And she reported that as funny thing though. I was she says this meeting is over. I said okay. So I turned around. I said have a wonderful day. Walked out of the office, and as soon as I passed through the threshold of her door, she started shouting at me.
Yikes!
Yeah, she said. You have to leave. You have to leave. You have to leave. I'm like, okay, I'm gone.
Wow.
Do you see my back?
So you have to wear process. You have to wear the Typhoid Mary name tag now at the elementary school.
She had reported this to the district as essentially an assault.
Oh no.
What?
And I really didn't have any idea what that was all about. My best friend actually drove my son to school the next day. We live in Elk Grove, and the school was in Sacramento. And he said that the police were out there waiting for me. And I said,
out front? Like while you were just coming out of the school?
Yeah, they were. He drove my son to school, and then called me and said, yeah, the police were out here waiting for you. And they were disappointed that you hadn't driven him in. And I said, did you give him our address?
Yeah, no
so,
kidding. Sorry, they're
didn't
disappointed.
Hear from him.
Yeah, you hate to disappoint the police when they're waiting for you.
I hated that.
On that happy note, we really do have to take a break. I can't wait to see
what happens next.
Before we started, I told her, I go, we take breaks at the quarter hour, but sometimes we blow it. Yeah, this would be one of those times. we'll be right back with you in 2 minutes. We're speaking with Catherine Duran. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. We've uploaded all sorts of fun information for you. You'll like it. We'll be right back.
Slowly go by and feed them on your dreams. The one they fix, the one you know by. Don't you ever ask them why, if they told you you would cry. So just look at them and sigh.
And then the police come.
They tell you you can't love your child.
Oh, no, that's in Catherine's version of the song.
Could you hear me singing?
No, but, yeah, then the police come. So we're speaking with Catherine Duran, who's stepping up, trying to weigh in on behalf of her child at school and
staying involved in her child's
staying
education.
Staying involved,
which
actually,
is, I think what all parents should be doing.
And her son decided to get involved, and he was handing out op forms for the Common Core testing, and then the principal went berserk, and the police showed up. So, did they go to your house?
Well, ultimately, they did. Actually, Monday, I didn't take him to school on Monday either, and. My friend Matt took him to school that day too, and after he dropped him off, he called me and said, "You know, I was headed out there and passed a black and white that would be a city cop fly by heading the other way." And he says, "I'm pretty sure they're headed to the house." And I said, "Yeah, probably." And sure enough, 15 minutes later, but I was in the shower. He had to wait quite a while for me, and I thought maybe he could come back later, but no, he was not going anywhere. So anyway, I talked to him for a little bit. He handed me a suspension notice. The principal had gone, and you know, there's a process for that. And
you were suspended
ultimately,
from
what
school,
I found
or?
Out later was that she had made up a scenario where she felt unsafe. She had told him that she had felt unsafe and that I was very threatening to her. And so I needed to be suspended from campus. So I was not allowed to set foot on the campus or, at any time without permission. From written permission from the principal.
Oh.
And so I thought that was...
Could you stand
I kind of giggled a little bit. And the officer was very nice, and I said, do you have any kids? And he says, yeah. And I said, well, do you know anything about Common Core? And he says, no, I really don't. My wife probably does, but I know nothing. So I gave him some opt-out forms, and he goes, gee, thanks. He goes, this is great. I'll just hand these to my wife.
And
so hopefully opted his kids out.
Did you tell him to make sure and have his kids take him around the playground and stuff?
Yeah. Hand them out. Be sure they hand them out around their campus, too. And... So anyway, you know, the thing is that I called right away, and I called over the course of 14 days, it actually worked out to be about 3 weeks, and I called every single day, and she would not take my calls, and she would not return my calls.
This is the principal wouldn't take
this
your calls?
This is the principal.
What is she, five?
Well, and then an ombuds person called me.
Really?
She didn't want to be called an ombudswoman. She's an ombuds person, and she called and tried to, you know...
I'm sorry. What is that?
That's like a... Well, the only where... I mean, you have ombudsmen for, like, senior citizens and stuff. They weigh in. Do they have them for the school system?
Yeah, you know, what they're trying to do is to find a conflict resolution. So they are, you know, looking for ways to facilitate a meeting, and this is what she was talking to me about. And she actually said a couple of times, which just really threw me off. She said, "Well, will you feel safe going on campus?" And I thought, "Why the heck would I not feel safe?"
They're 5 years old. I mean, they're fifth graders. Come on, they could do some damage.
Yeah, they could do some serious damage. And then I read the details of the suspension letter, and I realized that she had made up, I don't have it in front of me, but she had made up a story about, you know, how she felt unsafe and that I was threatening. And I thought, oh my gosh, this is, you have got to be kidding me. So, you know, I said, what I want to do is have a meeting with her, absolutely. And then the superintendent, after this, okay, this hit the news. This went completely viral on Facebook. It actually ended up going, you know, I mean, absolutely everywhere. And
how did it get to that point? I mean, from a private conversation.
Well, it was pretty outrageous that they would suspend me for, you know, having a conversation with the principal over my son handing out opt-out forms, exercising his First Amendment rights, on campus. So that was pretty outrageous. And, you know, I mean, it didn't really upset me that this was something that was going to make the news at that point, because this is something that needs, you know, it is sensational and all that, and it is a big deal. And it is... hopefully was something that was bringing attention to this issue. Why would the school make a big deal out of handing out these opt-out forms and saying that it's inappropriate, when the truth of the matter is that the schools, it is their responsibility actually to give that option. I don't want to say the word should. I'm sort of in hate, a little, having a little hate, love-hate relationship with the word should. They should be, they're supposed to inform parents of the right to opt out of these standardized tests. And since they weren't doing that,
Go ahead. Yeah, you were doing that, since they weren't.
Yep, I was doing that. And so, and the more and more we learn about the testing, and by now, of course, we know, you know, infinitely more than we did at the time. But even then, just looking at, you know, connecting the dots from, you know, this point and this point and this point, and, you know, it all checks out, and it's frightening, and it's too much for, you know, the average parent who's working and has a, you know, some semblance of a life to absorb and to try to get all upset about. So, I mean, we just wanted to make it as easy as possible for people to know, to understand you have the right to opt your children out, and here are some concerns for you to look at.
Now, how many parents or teachers at this point in time had contacted you? Anybody?
had contacted me?
Yeah, about
the
issue.
From the school?
Yeah. Any parents?
Yeah,
no parents, no teachers?
Everyone just ran and hid in the bushes?
They, as a matter of fact, my son had transferred into a different classroom and had a new teacher at that time, and his previous teacher was, who he just adored, and they had a great relationship, wouldn't even look at him.
Wow.
And so I had to explain to him that, you know, unfortunately, he is feeling pressured to be favorable to this whole Common Core thing and the testing and all that. And you know, he fears for his job. My son had been around me long enough to know what was going on. Heard the news, heard the reports, heard, you know, a lot of the video of other people, other teachers, and you know, teachers on the East Coast are jumping up and down. And I mean, there's a firestorm in New York State and other states where they've had this a lot longer than we have. And so he's seen the reaction from those teachers and parents on the East Coast. And so he was very well aware.
They do like it?
They do not like it.
Okay.
They do not like it, and they've just been having a horrible time trying to, especially New York, trying to get out of it. It is a nightmare for them. But anyway, my son, little patriot that he is, he just wanted to continue to take those opt-out forms and disseminate them. And he insisted, "Mom, please let me take them." So he'd hide them in his pockets. He'd hide them in his backpack. And he'd hand them out, you know, and he was secretive about it. And I got a little chuckle and everything until the following week when he was, and I could tell, you know, you just know when your kid's sick, and he's never sick. So he was faking being sick, and he was crying and didn't want to get out of bed. And I said, "What's going on?" And I'm texting a friend of mine who's Meg Norris, is a Georgia teacher who quit her job as a seventh grade teacher in order to fight Common Core, to fight against Common Core. And I was texting her what was going on. "Oh, crazy morning, blah, blah, blah." And as this thing developed, I was texting her the story, what was going on. "I can't believe that they did this to him." I said, as he was telling me what had gone on in the last couple of days, I was absolutely infuriated. And I just said, first of all, I cannot believe that I've been calling several times a day. The principal will not return my calls, and she will not take my calls. Meanwhile, his teacher had seen him reach for something in his desk and put it in his pocket, and she asked what it was, and then ultimately asked him to open his lunch pail. They had checked backpacks of other kids, and "What's in your pocket? You're going to need to pull it out." And he says, "No, I'm sorry, I can't do that." So she says, "Well, you're going to have to go to the office." So she sends him to the office. This is a lunch break. He's there for 90 minutes, and the principal is going to give him, first of all, she gets another teacher involved so that there's two of them, and says, "Well, I'm going to give you the opportunity to do the right thing and give me your opt-out forms." "No, I'm sorry, I can't do that," he says.
So they assumed he had opt-out forms, or did they see him?
Yeah, he did, but he didn't want to give them up. And,
oh, okay.
Yeah, and so she says, "Well, you know, why do you not want to let me have them?" And he said, "Because my mother pays for them." And they're not intended for the district, they're intended for other kids. And she said, "No, I'm going to ask you to do one more time to do the right thing." And then so eventually what she did was she sent him out into the hallway to eat his lunch by himself. And he started crying when he was telling me this story. And I said, "Christopher, why did you not call me? Because I told you, if anything happens and you don't feel right, give me a call." And he said, "I did. It was the first thing I said to her was, 'Please, may I call my mother?' And she said, 'No, at this time you may not call your mother.'"
Oh, whoopsie.
So, yeah.
And then the hammer fell.
Not happy.
Okay, we have to take a quick break, then we're going to find out what happened. This is great. We're going to have like a cliffhanger program all morning or afternoon. Yeah, she didn't tell me we were going to play cliffhanger. I like it.
I know.
So we're speaking with Catherine Duran. We're talking about, I guess, activism. But it's interesting, we're talking about child activism, which is pretty awesome. And apparently the school system doesn't like it. So if you have a child who thinks he might be an activist, he better make friends now and swear them to secrecy. they better start building their little underground early. Oh, my gosh.
Seriously.
This is horrible. You're listening to We the People Radio. You can find us online at wethepeopleradio.us. We'll be right back.
So wonderful, a miracle. Oh, it was beautiful, magical. And all the birds in the trees, they'd be singing so happily. Oh, joyfully, oh, playfully, watching me. But then they sent me away, teach me how to be sensitive.
This is the theme song that the principal plays. Classic. Oh my gosh, you're rejoining We the People Radio. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. We're here with Catherine Duran out of Elk Grove. So we're talking about the Gestapo at a school in Sacramento.
That's right.
So Catherine, when they put your son out in the hallway...
And said he couldn't call you.
Said he couldn't call you.
Right.
Did they, even at that point, they never called you and told you there was a problem?
No.
They just left him out there crying.
Just left him out there.
Did
he get to go back to class?
Eventually he got to go back to class, and since it was, you know, he'd been out there for 90 minutes, it was getting closer to the end of the day, so he did get to return to class, but he didn't tell me for 2 days that this had happened. And, you know, this was a huge problem for me because of the fact that he trusted and loved his teachers and the principal.
That's over.
And this was a huge betrayal, and he didn't know really how to... He'd never experienced anything like that, so he didn't know how to articulate that. And so that was the thing that had just finally gotten me outraged, because the rest of it is understandable. You know, and I went on the news, and I had spoken to several radio shows, and I said, you know, the teachers and our administrators, our school districts, our school boards, they're fed what they would, you know, with this Common Core machine, what the government wants them to, you know, the narrative that they want them to use. They know what they know. They don't know why we're pushing back, except that that they're also instructed that, you know, we are tinfoil hat wearing people, we're fear driven, we are misinformed and uninformed and all of that. And of course, you know, the opposite is actually true. So, you know, it's understandable that they don't, they're scared. They're running scared too, and they also have to hit their numbers too. They've got to, you know, it was really important for them to get close to 100% participation in this test. So,
and that's really what's driving this. This is what's driving it. Is they have to hit these participation numbers,
exactly,
or it affects their funding.
Exactly. So it comes back to money for the school. So
they believe that it was going to affect their funding. And that was the important thing, you know, what they believe and their lack of information. And it's heartbreaking. It really is. And I knew this. Those kind of things are understandable. You know, understanding that they don't have the information that they need and what's happening. And you see this, you know, not just in issues like this, but you see this in all kinds of things and all kinds of areas and all kinds of issues that pop up where, you know, these teachers, they are fear-driven. And they are doing really, really, they're making really bad choices. Really bad. They're doing really bad things like this. You know, none of that stuff was, you know, none of what went on with my son was okay with any parent. And that's one of the reasons why this story got such traction, is because it was outrageous what they had done to him.
And, what did they say when you, I mean, because I'm sure you had the opportunity at some point to say, what were you thinking? I mean, how did they defend themselves, or the news media asked them? Did they just not respond
to anybody? They were interviewed. Initially, the district said that they tried to make the story out that I was actually handing out opt-out forms to children on campus. And so we got that
clarified. You're just hiding in the bushes trying to be like a fifth grader?
Right, I'm a crazy
kid. Come over here.
Doing crazy illegal things.
Yeah, I think I would have been on the sidewalk.
Pushing him through the fence?
Absolutely.
Would you like Bill to come down and help you? He's got a little free time.
Well, as a matter of fact, just for fun, I did that. One of my partners with Concerned Parents of Elk Grove, we have a big sign that says Stop Common Core. And the big tea party sign is red, white, and blue. And we went out with her, and we've got PVC pipe, you know, frame. So we set it up, and, you know, it's a big, I don't know, 2x4, 2.5x4, I think, banner. And we stood out there on the sidewalk across the street from the school. And it was sort of a double whammy, because we had kids being picked up by their parents from the elementary school, and then there is a charter high school right next door. So it was great, because we had kids walking and wanted to know how they could opt out of the test.
That's classic.
Really fun.
Automatic customers.
Gosh,
right,
it's a
there.
Good,
yeah,
it's
we handed out a couple hundred opt-out forms that day. So
it really worked out for the school. No backlash or anything?
Yeah, no. So,
oh, my gosh.
So what happened next?
So Glenn Beck, I had people were calling me saying, Glenn Beck talked about you on the radio today. And I was like, really? Oh, my gosh, that's so awesome. I love Glenn Beck. And then I got a call from his producer, and, you know, they got us on the show. And it turned out that at the time, Tim Donnelly was working on, he had authored a bill. It was a local control bill. And he was getting ready to present that. And so we both went on the Glenn Beck program the following Monday, and so it was great. Because I had to stay home and drive my son to school, I didn't actually end up going out to Texas for it, and we did it from a satellite studio in Sacramento. But it was great. It was really good to be interviewed by Glenn and tell the story there. So
just out of curiosity, back on the ranch, your son is still going to school, and what's going on there? As you're showing up on Glenn Beck and everything, are they like crazy polite friendly, or are they still?
Well, the teacher was very friendly. The principal never would see me, and because we were contemplating taking some legal action, yeah, taking some legal action, and that's still not off the table, but, you know, again, when my son revisits that whole thing, it's traumatizing for him. It's hurtful, and it's hard for him to talk about. And I'm not going to force him. You know, I mean, there's plenty of other stuff to worry about, and other ways that we're using to shut down Common Core. And it's not going to make or break the deal as far as that's concerned, or the activism or anything as far as that's concerned. And I don't want to cause him any more, you know, trauma than, you know, than what actually happened to him. So he's happy so far. Actually, he's homeschooled now.
Oh, okay. So that's how you solved the problem.
That's how I solved that. You broke up with them. That was pretty much it. And I would have probably done it anyway, although I had been saying for, oh gosh, the longest time, people would say, why don't you homeschool your child? And I'm like, yeah, you don't understand. You know, this is not a good fit. It's not a good fit. And people would say, you know, almost exclusively, people would say, oh, it's not as hard as you think. And I'd say, yeah, but you don't know my kid. And then I finally started saying, yeah, except I would homeschool my child, except he's way smarter than I am.
I hate when that
which
happens.
Is actually true. But he did really well. He did very well. We did very well. We did an online academy, and then we layer on activities and other issues, other subjects in music and things like that. So it's been fantastic, really.
Nice.
So the same, yeah. Just kind of a side note, when you homeschool your child, you're not required to incorporate any of the Common Core standards?
No, you're not, and I don't have to. That's something that's, you know, you have to pay very close attention to whatever curriculum that you choose for school, because if you're aligning with a district charter, or you're in any way connected or reporting to the state, you're doing Common Core. You may be teaching your child, you know, any way that you want, but when it comes to the accountability portion of it, when you're, you know, if you consent to do the test is Common Core aligned. It's going to be the SBAC test here in California. If you are not careful, you're teaching them, if you're not teaching them all ways, in fact, the ways that we learned math, and you're using any of the district materials, then you're teaching them Common Core.
Mm.
I mean, that's what it is. So, and, you know, I mean, you're free to teach your child anything that you want, and they have, you know, they do have a district person, and I don't utilize that at all.
That
I didn't
resource.
Want to be accountable at all in any way to the state, and so mine is an out-of-state online academy.
Oh, so you're allowed to do that?
It's fully accredited, and it's
nice.
Great.
You know what? Do me a favor, and when we get done with all this, maybe you could send me a link to what curriculum, easy for me to say, you're using, and we'll put it on there so that people could see that.
I will do that.
I can hear people out there thinking, well, what is it she's using?
Ours is an online Christian academy. It's called Enlightium, and I will send you a link to that. And I really, my son really loves it because he excels at Bible. He's got an eidetic memory. He has a photographic memory.
Nice.
So when he learns Bible scripture, which we do quite a bit of, you know, he has church and he's got two different church groups and youth group and that kind of thing where they do scripture, he already excels at that. So it's great because he gets A's in Bible. So,
nice.
And that doesn't hurt my feelings at all. So I'm very proud of him.
Well, good for him.
And yeah. So, but we do have to be very careful about the online, and also the tutor. He needs a math tutor, and I'm looking for a third party math program, or, you know, a tutor, like a Kumon type thing, in all of, you know, one something like that. And they're Common Core, and you know, they are helping kids to get through what they're doing in the public and private schools that are using Common Core, and then also other ways of they may be approaching it from both directions, but you have to understand that they are learning this Common Core. And if you're going to be an activist against Common Core, I think the last thing you want to do is say, we'll just take a little bit. We'll take Common Core light.
Yeah.
No,
we'll
we're not little, doing that.
Just a little rat poison in our food. It'll work out just fine.
Yeah, really.
Catherine, we have to take one more quick break here before the top of the hour. And then we'll come back with you. And then just to let people know, next hour we're going to kind of move into the vaccine issue a little bit because, you know, once an activist, always an activist, right? So when it comes to children's rights and parental rights.
I want to be an activist.
Yeah, California will bring the activism out in you. And I'm sure there are lots of other states who also have that problem. You're listening to We the People Radio. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
Please tell me now. Please, please.
Okay, Catherine, the $64,000 question. Who was that?
Duran Duran.
Oh, you win.
Classic.
Oh, I've never heard that one before.
Bob's funny. He's like, I wonder if she'll know who this is. So we're here with Catherine Duran, not of Duran Duran. That's a very long title. Oh, my gosh. So here in the last few minutes of this hour, give us a sneak preview on the vaccine thing so that people can get through the news and hang with us.
So, well, I am pretty much like everyone. My child is vaccinated. I believed my, you know, even though I was in the health and fitness industry and worked with and in the pharmaceutical industry as well, I knew alternatives as well, and the theory behind vaccination and strengthening immune system and supporting your immune system. So I should have known better. I should have done my research, but I didn't. And thank God that my child is not vaccine injured, but, well, to my knowledge, but I got a little bit worried because his pediatrician had kept asking, insisting that we do boosters and flu shots. And I said, no, I'm not doing that. And he'd get mad at me. So eventually I did some research and I'm not liking what I'm seeing. And then I realized on my own, this one didn't really fall in my lap. I actually went looking, on my own and then started realizing that there was an issue. And then when SB 277 popped up,
vaccinate your kids or they can't go to school.
Which
right.
is it is essentially what turns out to be a mandated vaccine if you want your child in public or private school.
Again, it's California stepping up and telling us all what's best for our kids and making it mandatory
one size fits
to
all.
Conform to the rules or you're out.
You will get the shots.
You will get the shots.
And if they're telling you that you're, you know, we know what's best and we want to educate you on what's best for your child, you know, great. Except we're talking about a collective. We're talking about, you know, not necessarily the individual, but we're talking about the protection and the health of the community. So, and, you know, I'm looking at this just exactly the same as with Common Core. I probably should have said, you know, I started speaking out about Common Core. This is, I'm core issue driven and not issue driven. So the issue is not the issue. It could be Common Core, it could be vaccinations, it could be, you know, forced body piercings or, you know, tattoos. The issue is the same. The government doesn't have any business telling me what to do with my body or that of my child. And so I got a phone call one day, hey, can you help me with this? And I really don't know what happened. All of a sudden, I became a vaccine activist.
you fell so right into vaccine activism.
I fell right into it, and my issue is, you know, all about the theft of liberty. And so, I'm looking at the Common Core issue as an issue that catapulted me into the restoration of liberty.
Nice. We're going to come back with Catherine, talk about that some more in the second hour. You're listening to We the People Radio. Join us online, We the People Radio.
The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Good afternoon. You are joining We the People Radio with Aaron Ryan,
Bill Cundiff,
and Bob Martin.
On cue.
Right on cue. Listen to that. We're
like a fine-oiled machine.
Yeah.
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 With no leaks. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. So our first hour was with Catherine Duran. Our second hour is with Catherine Duran because, you know what, once you start in the activism mode, it's very difficult to escape its clutches because you start figuring out there's a lot more that has to be done. Catherine is one of those activists who actually gets things done. Not a lot of railing and whining and moaning. Lots of research and promoting and digging in. So first hour we were talking about how she got into this mess. that being said, with her son and Common Core.
Well, you know you're doing something right when you're an activist with more than 10 followers.
There you go.
You know, and you got people listening to you. You got people calling you, wanting to hear your story. I mean, obviously you're doing something right.
Well, and things start to happen. You know, things move on. So actually, you've been part of the the array of people pushing back on Common Core. We've had some of them on this morning, but I didn't even know about that part. I only knew about the vaccine part. Because we were kind of fishing for someone to come on and talk about SB 277, and that has now passed. So, Catherine, give us a nutshell. Now, what does that mean? I get that all the kids in California have to be vaccinated before they go to school, but what about all the booster shots and all that? I haven't looked into the legislation, so what is it?
Well, there's a schedule. Right. So by the time a child is, this year it will be, you can enroll your child in the fall for school. But by the first of the year, by the first of 2016, they will need to have their full schedule of vaccinations by that date. And so if they haven't been vaccinated at all, they're going to have all of those vaccines done, either at once or in the next few months, to be ready for a public school or a private school.
Is there an age? Like, what if your kid's a junior in high school and they never had any vaccines?
They're going to have to be vaccinated.
Get out! They've got to catch up on all that stuff.
Yeah, it's K-12, preschool. We already have the issue with preschool. So, but yeah, it's they will have to be. If they have never vaccinated at all, they'll either have to homeschool or find another alternative, or be fully vaccinated.
Yikes!
And that's the legislation. If
are they going to really kick them out of school?
They are really going to kick them out of school. That is a bill that just passed. Everyone should be outraged, and it's one of the things that I have painted on my car windows. If you're not outraged, you don't have enough information.
Mm. Is this happening in other, like Common Core, you were saying that New York kind of led the way on this. Has anybody done this, or are we blazing the trail?
We have two other states that have strict, have just these very strict vaccination mandates. And you would ask me that, and I've forgotten.
Well, that's okay. I was just curious if there were
right
other states.
Right out of my head. But yeah, there are two other states currently that have passed that same legislation. But there are other states, many other states, that where they're trying it, and they're just saying no, thank you. And they're dumping those bills. There's some that are tabled. There's a whole list of states that have completely dumped it, and California, of course, is leading the way.
So the states that have already done it, are they far enough down the road to where we know how they've punished people and all that, or are they new? Is it new?
It's new.
Okay.
Yeah, it's. I don't think that there's any. I haven't. If there is, and I'm not an expert on this, I just want you to know. Again,
no, it's okay. We just were curious what you're seeing from on the ground.
And although I'm doing the research on it, all the minute details and all of that, I am not. I don't have that all at my fingertips. But what I do have is the passion to stop the overreach of government. Sorry, my phone.
It's okay. Someone's beeping you.
Yeah, where it doesn't belong, and this is one of those places where government does not belong. Government does not have any authority to violate your personal property. And I want people to understand that you are a property owner by virtue of breathing, and the government has no business violating your body. And I just have a really hard time with people who push back on that that notion, because we have a perceived threat of possible exposure to a disease that could potentially harm you, or maybe if you're really sick already, kill you.
Except that the vaccines, and we're not on here this afternoon to be vaccine experts, because none of us are. However, the vaccine industry will tell you that it doesn't work for everyone. Doesn't necessarily mean the people who are vaccinated will never get the mumps or the measles or chicken pox or whatever.
And this is one of the things too. I've watched pretty much most of the Senate hearings, and it's just unbelievable the testimony that they give. And I'm pretty sure that they do it because they just believe, for the most part, the general population, the people that are not showing up and are passionate about it, and you know, out there with their torches and pitchforks, are not listening. They don't care. They don't care, and they know that. Our legislators know this. So they say things like, well, the science is clear. Yeah, no, not so much. The science is not clear. If the science were clear, I don't think that people would be out there saying, the science isn't clear if you can't give definitive proof that these vaccinations are 100% safe and 100% effective. So if there's any sort of risk whatsoever, a person has the right to decide whether or not to take it. And one of the things that I use an analogy, because I think, you know, language is very important, and words mean something. And, you know, one of the things that I found is that people I found this with my own family, who's very, you know, not really thrilled with me pushing back on the whole vaccination issue, because they think that everybody should be vaccinated. Well, the word vaccine, in most minds now, we've been programmed to believe that they're good. They're just inherently good. They are synonymous with protection, with safety, with you know, being free from disease. And so what I tell people is, you know, how many people do you know that that say, oh, I don't ever take a pill. I don't take pills. I don't care how bad the pain. I do
sure.
not take pills. I just don't take pills. Well, this is the government coming to your door saying, hello, Ms. Catherine, we know that you don't like to take pills, but the government requires that you swallow this one. Well, I don't take pills. Well, yeah, but it's a mandate. Well, what's in it? Well, you know, it doesn't really matter what's in it, because it's a mandate.
It's good for everyone. So
and that's the thing with these vaccines is, once your child is vaccinated with that, you don't know if they're going to have a reaction. You don't know if they have an allergy. You don't know if they're hypersensitive to some component in that vaccination until it happens. And so a parent has to have the information. And even if they don't, I'm a conscientious objector, and I'll say, it's my personal belief. It doesn't have to be a religious belief, but I could call it a religious belief too, because that's very personal.
They got rid of that though, right? Doesn't the new law take away the religious exemption?
The law does. The law takes away the religious exemption and the personal belief exemption.
Nice. And so if your child is homeschool, do they hunt you down?
Not so far. You can homeschool now, but you know, this is one of the ways where, you know, we inch in just a little bit at a time. You know,
sure.
I mean, I like to use the Patriot Act as an example, but that's a whole other story. But yeah, so far you can homeschool and be free of that. They can't come to your house and say you have to vaccinate.
Yeah.
But how much sense does it make to think that this would be where it would end?
Exactly.
Because they will be coming to your door eventually saying, yeah, we noticed that you know, your child hasn't been vaccinated, and you know, we're here to catch you up.
Well, and for those people who think that that's silly, or that they won't be able to do it, you got to think about what's going on with all the health records. They're all being housed electronically, so how tough will it be to do a sweep of the records?
That's right.
And, you know, all the codes, like anything else that you do in the computer, everything has a code. So
right.
Every patient, so how long before they come after grown-ups and everybody? And,
That's
you know,
right.
I mean, this is a super slippery super slippery slope.
Well, and this is how it coordinates with the whole Common Core, and I like to say machine, because, you know, Common Core, it's not the state standards, it's not the standards, it's, you know, Common Core, just to get it out there, is absolutely everything that has anything to do with education.
That has anything to do with what?
That has anything to do with education.
Mm.
So, and in order for, you know, when the states were putting this all together, the federal government paid for each state to develop their own statewide longitudinal data system. And so a part of this data system, around this data system, there are astronomical numbers of companies that have sprouted up, you know, seemingly from nowhere, and some big, some small, some are the, you know, gigantic corporations, and some of the mom-and-pop people like you and me, and they are out there collecting data on absolutely everything. So one of the things that the CEO of one of the bigger companies said, or the biggest company that I know of, said, it's 10 orders of magnitude more than Google on every child. There's millions of data collected on every child every day. Actually, every hour of every day. And it's more valuable than any element on the planet, and it's not even close. So you can imagine, with that sort of data and understanding that the government, the U.S. Department of Education, Department of Labor, there are many other agencies, government agencies, and other third-party agencies that have access. They are recipients of this data. So you better believe it. They are going to know absolutely everything about every child.
Sure.
Well, that's our future population. When they get to a certain age, they know exactly everything there is to know, what direction they're going to go, what their thinking is, because they've already programmed that.
It's predictive, and it's predictive thinking. So one of the things he says is, hey, Minority Report, remember Minority Report, you know, Mr. Cruz, you should really think about taking that vacation you were thinking about, Never mentioned anybody, but he's walking into Banana Republic, and the Banana Republic big avatar is talking to him about the vacation that he has been thinking about, because they know these things.
Totally so creepy. All right, yeah. We need to take a quick break. We're coming back. We're speaking with Catherine Duran this morning, or this afternoon. Kind of feels like morning. And we're talking about Common Core and government overreach and vaccines. Yeah, you name it. We're talking about it. So, politics, activism, and all that good stuff here at We the People Radio. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
Well, you filled up my head with so many lies. You twisted my heart till something snapped inside. I'd like to give it one more try, but my give a damn.
Great vaccine song. We just found the ultimate vaccine theme song.
Great.
Oh, my gosh. You're listening to We the People Radio. We are here with Catherine Duran. We're talking about government overreach, personal liberty, and all that good stuff. So what's the deal right now with them coming after everybody's kids? I mean, my guess is that if they came after all the grown-ups first, there's too much pushback. But if they come after the kids, it's a kind of a smaller, it's like they always do. You know, they pick us off little by little.
Okay, well, if you're asking me about my feeling about it, I think,
looking for opinions,
you know,
here.
Well, yeah, my feeling is that it's, well, and, you know, I have no gauge other than, you know, history and, you know, what I'm seeing right before my very eyes. And so, to me, it appears that it's the government is, you see, the government is doing what government does. Our founders had, you know, framed our country and our government in a way that prevented tyranny. It gave us the tools to fight back, you know, tyranny. But government is just doing what government does. You give it, it's just like I say, you know, we love fire, we need fire, we cook with it, It's necessary, you know, as long as you can keep it contained, it's a very good thing. When you let it go out of control, or you forget what its purpose is, and you let it go wild on its own, it's going to get huge and it's going to burn the forest down. My point is that you can't really get mad at the fire for being so gosh darn hot.
And
I think what's happening with the government is that it's these little toe dips. I think one of the things that's important for people to understand is that, you know, with Common Core was the first time in history that we had a, you know, it's a de facto law, a law imposed on the country bypassing Congress. Okay, so they literally, the executive branch has rendered our Congress impotent and useless. I got a pen and I got a phone. So there is a little toe dip. How much pushback are we going to get back? Well, the people are going, well, you know, I mean, that's what we do. That's Common Core. That's what we have at school. Or what's Common Core, right?
Yeah.
Nobody even knows. So it doesn't occur to them that this is a usurpation of power. So there's a little toe dip. We got away with it. What else can we do in exactly the same fashion? And that's what's happening. So now, I don't know. If we can get people so conditioned to believe that the government is doing the best for them, and we're going to do this, you know, by way of vaccinations, okay? This is a multifaceted benefit for many facets there. But when the government can get the people to line their children up for a government-mandated vaccine, they have got it made. So that's my opinion. That's not my scientific opinion,
I mean,
that's based on evidence. That's kind of what's happening.
At this point, it's everybody's vantage point. What did you see in Sacramento? You had, I know there were a zillion people down there. I was not there. So what did you witness? I know someone,
I don't know
if it was you told me or somebody else told me, but they gave all the pro-vaccine people seats inside the Senate or the hearing chamber.
In the gallery, yeah. Right,
and everybody else
chamber,
had to wait outside?
Well, I mean, there were, you know, thousands at, you know, any of those, you could pretty much count on, you know, 500 plus people, and several of them, there were well over 1,000 people. So there's no way that they could handle that in the, in the gallery there. But, so, I mean, but people were just lined up for days. So, yeah, it was, you know, one of the things you asked me, what was going on in those hearings. One of the things that really strikes me is that we had so-called, you know, constitutional attorneys testifying in the Senate committees that this bill is constitutional. And Dorit, oh, I keep forgetting her name, Dorit, it'll come to me after our call, right? She said, it's not a good idea. It basically, you know, the religious exemption is not a good idea because it basically encourages people to lie.
Oh, you're kidding.
No. It encourages people to lie. And the Pope, by the way, had, and the Catholic Church recognizes the need for, you know, to protect communities, et cetera, all those kind of arguments, and throwing in whatever they can to try to validate the position. And I tell you, you know, nowhere in the Constitution does it say that there's no provision that I know of anyway declaring that my personal religion or my faith is contingent upon, you know, any organized religion or a particular denomination with a registered or incorporated name or something like that. There's no faith leader that qualifies or disqualifies my faith. I am my own. I have my own religion. I don't need to report to another religion, not even Jesus. It doesn't say anywhere. It just is such an outrage to think that they would try to negate a religious exemption using that argument.
Yeah,
that
no kidding.
Something that really struck me. Another ridiculous argument, I think, is one, and this actually, there's a couple that actually really happened. I'll try to remember. She said something like, you know, one child's death is too many, especially, oh, here, I found it, okay. One child's death is too many, especially when it may be preventable. And this was actually a Mendoza said, with the recent deadly outbreaks of measles and influenza, we must do everything in our power to protect California's children who spend time in daycare. Really?
Wow.
So this is in the Senate Health Committee, and they're trying to push through AB 1117, I think it is.
And what's that one going to do?
And that's giving incentives to doctors to vaccinate Medi-Cal patients. So how about that?
Yikes. You know, we don't even, we had a lady here in town, my former co-host used to be a dog babysitter, you know, she like boarded dogs at her house.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
She moved to Utah, so it was like, eh, darn, I got to do something different. So anyway, we were going to put our little dog with somebody else. And this lady required that they get all sorts of shots. And not just the kennel cough or whatever, but all sorts of extra stuff. A flu shot for dogs.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, we're really in a pinch this time, and they were supposed to get a series of shots. They got one, and that's it. I don't even vaccinate my dogs.
You know, you know, we just think, I stepped on a nail when I was a kid, and, you know, my parents took me for a tetanus shot. You know, really didn't think much about it. I think something like that, yeah, that could happen. But, I mean, things are not the way they were, you know, 50, 60, 70 years ago. Well, not 50, 70, 80 years ago. I started doing tetanus. Well, you know, you don't want lockjaw. That's just a preventive thing that I think that people didn't really think about, but when you start to look at the science behind that, and, you know, how often do we see tetanus? Is it because of the shots? You know,
yeah,
know.
That is kind of, well, and then look at how much cleaner everything is now. You know, we went through long periods of time where they didn't even scrub up before surgery.
That's
so
right.
So I think, yeah, maybe cleanliness might help us out a lot.
Exactly. We didn't have the kind of sanitation that we had, you know, Even hygiene, medical care, medical treatment, we didn't have access to. Well, people back in the early days when my father-in-law had polio, he had gotten polio, and he lived in one of the poorest areas of his state. And back then, I mean, those were the early days, in the early 30s, and it was at a time, literally, where people were switching from icebox to electric refrigerators.
True.
So, you know, things are just not nearly the same, and safe and healthy as they are now. So,
and yet the vaccines, you know, flu and stuff still have mercury in them and things like that. And, you know, at the end of the day, what happened to the personal liberty there on that level? I mean, I think that's the big complaint that everybody
that is
a family decision, a personal decision. I'm curious about, like, a Pacific Justice and those guys. Have they weighed in on all this? I know they do all the family-type things.
I don't know what their position is on the SB 277 at the moment. I haven't.
I just was curious if they were part. I wasn't part of any of that, so I guess we're looking to just pick your brain. We need to take a really quick break again, and we'll come right back with Catherine Duran. We're talking about things that you would talk about on 4th of July weekend. Bill's over there typing, so he's been rendered mute. Say something, Bill.
Hey, yeah, we'll be back. I'm trying to control my blood pressure through this whole thing because it's the state is running amok. You know, they just don't have the right to do the stuff they're doing. And until people, you know, like yourself, stand up and say, "Hey, folks, look what's going
not
on
doing
here.
It.
I'm not doing it."
Yeah,
sorry, no can do.
It's coming for all of us. We'll be back with you in 2 minutes. You're listening to We the People Radio. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
We don't need no education. We don't need no thought control. No dark sarcasm in the classroom.
the cult of personality. I know your anger, I know your dreams. I've been everything you wanna be. Oh, I'm the cult of personality. Like Mussolini and Kennedy, I'm the cult of personality, the cult of personality, the cult of personality.
Maybe that's Senator Pan's theme song. Because we got to get there. Forgot to tell you part of what we like to do is have a little fun, because it's so incredibly frustrating. It's the most fun you can have while blood is shooting out of your eyes, I believe, is what what the commercial says.
So, Catherine, I got a question. What would happen if you just flatly didn't get your kid vaccinated and they kicked them out of school?
Okay,
so now they come and they arrest you for not getting your child vaccinated. Your child. Okay, so they take your child. Well, are they going to strap them to a table and stick a needle in their arm and get them vaccinated so they can go to school under somebody else's watch? I mean,
how many kids can you fit in the foster care system?
Yeah,
what are they going to do, take them all?
Exactly. I mean, where does this go?
You know, it sounds crazy, but it's not out of the realm of possibility. In fact, you know, they were doing that. There's a YouTube video of a school district, that had a guy in a lab jacket go out to a lady's house and say, "We're here to give your child their vaccine." And this just happened, actually, that was over, it was before 2109. It was actually around the time of 2109, which was the previous bill. That was Senator Pan's, or actually it was Assemblyman Pan's bill at the time. So
he's the author of the vaccine bill.
He's the author of the vaccine bill of,
FB277.
So, yeah, I mean, it sounds crazy. It sounds very 1984. It sounds very...
It really does.
Well, but, hey, it's not... I don't see that that's out of the realm of possibility. But, you know, what do you... That's... When you allow the government to demand and enforce compliance, we've got a big, big problem.
Yeah. So. Well, when the government becomes everyone's parent, I mean, that's
right.
The bottom line is they want to be parents of your children. So how long before they want to be parents of all of us? And
that's right.
Being parents
that's
of our
right.
children
well, they,
isn't
that's,
good.
That's it, what they want.
That's not okay anyway.
Total control.
So it's kind of like the couple, I think it was in New York, that let their kids walk to a local park.
Oh, God, yes, the free-range kids.
Oh, yeah, and they took them away. You're not taking care of them.
Yeah, you can't let your kids walk in the daytime together home from the park.
So my question is, where is it written? That is there an age limit? Is there a time limit? Is there a time constraint? Is there a distance that they can and can't walk to? So what's the cutoff from the house?
Exactly. And what's the
park?
Who's the person that's
Who's the arbiter?
Well, yeah, and who
exactly.
who decides what an acceptable number is for these vaccines? 2%, 1%, 0.5%. I mean, who says that's okay? And the risk, like, I don't gamble. When I spend my money, I want to get something for it. I don't gamble. Why would I gamble with my health or my child's health because there's only a 1% chance you're going to lose?
That's exactly right.
That's what I don't get. Who's setting that number and making it okay?
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly right. You know, I had a bit of a story, and I'm not sure if I should tell it, actually, but...
Oh, really?
You know, when I'll just start it, and you cut me off if you think it's not appropriate, but, I had my when it was considered high risk because I was 40, and I was almost 41 when he was born. And so my OB at the time said she very strongly encouraged me to, and she scheduled the appointment, actually, for me to go, I lived in Lake Tahoe at the time, to come down here to Sacramento to have a procedure done. It's called a CVS. It's a chorionic villus sampling. And it is genetic testing. So it's a diagnostic tool, and they can find out a lot of things. So if there's some genetic malformations or genetic problems, that gives you an opportunity to make a decision. Well, what they do is they schedule you right at the 11th week. So they're scheduling you right around 9-10 weeks to get in for the 11th week, because in that way you're getting it done in the first trimester, and then you can make some pretty profound decisions based on whatever the...
Oh, so then if you're not happy with the result, you can kill it.
You can. Okay, so yeah, wow. So I guess we're okay with that.
Yeah, no, we're okay with that.
That answered my question.
Yeah, so, you know, it's funny. It's one of the top 10, you know, do not kill. Oh, okay. All right.
Right.
Good with that.
So my husband and I were counseled for 90 minutes before we did this.
Wow.
And I was confused. We're going to do it or not do it. Why are we being counseled of this? And I just really didn't understand. So we went to lunch before we did the procedure and all that, and, you know, my husband cried and everything, because there is a risk. It's a very minuscule risk, but there is a risk that you could cause, there's a couple of problems. One is a potential, very small, but it has happened, where it actually can affect the digits of the developing fetus. So it's, you know, they could be born with missing some fingers. Oh. Another risk is that it could actually cause spontaneous abortion. So we really were already in love with this baby. We wanted this baby. We planned it. We there's no ifs, ands, or buts. We were madly in love with this baby, and it was very emotional. So anyway, we made the decision. After all, we were counseled. And I now, after the fact, I want to say pressured. And I'm not trying to tell anybody that they shouldn't get genetic testing. That's not what I'm saying here. I think it's a very valuable tool. But for me, personally, I would never, ever, ever do it again. First of all, it was an expensive test. It did give me, I did find out the sex of my baby, which was pretty wonderful. But I could have lived without that until later.
Sure.
Because I would never do that again, because I would never, even if it was a half of a percent or a, you know, 0.1% chance that I could cause a spontaneous abortion or cause a malformation of my otherwise would have been healthy baby, I would not do that, because the risks do not outweigh the benefits. And I say that because no matter what the results of that test were, it would not have had any effect on the outcome of my pregnancy. I was having
right.
that baby. So what happens is that, now see, I knew that after the fact, and I should have researched, you know, beforehand, but I just didn't. And I think that, you know, probably most people don't. But what I'm saying is that, you know, having this test gives you great information. It's a wonderful thing. It's like, you know, if you have the opportunity to possibly protect your child from something, and you have all the information and you've made that decision for yourself and for your child, then great. You are assuming the risk. If there's a 5% chance or a half a percent chance that your child could end up with a life-altering, devastating a reaction from this vaccine, or that your child could potentially die or end up in a helmet and diapers for the rest of their life, are you willing to do that in order to keep them from getting, you know, your perception of, you know, this killer disease?
Sure.
By the way, I was born in 1961.
Hey, me too.
I am a measles, mumps, rubella, and chickenpox survivor.
Yep, me too.
Got a little fever, and everybody that I knew was, and I didn't know anyone who died from it. And, you know, I know that that's, you know, this is not
we all had chicken pox. We all had chicken pox in the basement together. All five of us.
But what
and then you have people that are horrified that mothers would
what do you mean that you put your children together in a room to play to get sick? Yeah, that's what we did.
Okay.
That's called immunity. That's a natural immunity.
Okay, Catherine, I'll go you one better. We were on vacation, family vacation. It's a classic tale of my childhood. Five kids. My dad had been working on a case. We lived in Connecticut. He'd been working on a case in Hawaii for like 2 months. He was gone for a long time. And that was when we all had the mumps, except my sister, my youngest sister. And so when my dad came home, we always did these big car trips, drove across the country every summer, stuff like that. So the big trip was going to be up to Prince Edward Island. So we were going up into Canada and out to Prince Edward Island. So we get ready to leave, and my youngest sister, who's like five, all of a sudden, you know, neck swells up like a chipmunk, you know. And my mom's like, that's it, we're going anyway. So as we went across the Canadian border, they made us all put on our windbreakers and tie them around our faces like little portholes so they couldn't see that my sister had the mumps.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, that is hilarious.
So we smuggled the mumps into a foreign country. that's pretty much how amazing. That's how serious my parents took it.
But isn't it interesting?
And we lived.
That you're given the opportunity to make that choice for your unborn child as to whether or not to do these tests that have a certain amount of risk attached to it.
Right.
Where is it in that child's life that we cross that line to where all of a sudden we don't get to make that?
Yeah,
that
it's not
choice.
Up to you anymore.
Now it's the state's right to make that choice
it's
for
probably
your
child.
Well, I mean,
like my parents.
That comes from, you know, we have a society now where it, these little incremental steps. I mean, none of this stuff could happen overnight. You know, we couldn't just get a new president who's going to, you know, fundamentally transform and have it transform overnight. So it's been these incremental steps. And it's not just him. It's not just our president, because it's not like I have anything personal against, you know, this president. But let's face it, he's done some pretty damaging things, is all I'm saying. But one of those things is Obamacare.
Yeah.
And when you have now the federal government in control of health care, when you have the government who has an interest in your health care, they have to be, they have a major concern with your health. How do you care for your health? And so one of those things is going to be, you know, hey, we're going to try to keep our community healthy because, you know, I say healthy with the air quotes, because a lot of sick people and disease is a big drain on the system, right? So they have a compelling governmental interest in your health.
So what's going to happen when they take it a step further and say any pregnant woman has to have a genetic test to make sure this child's going to be healthy?
Yeah.
Otherwise,
that's right.
You're not going to get to carry it to term.
Well, you don't get to
that's
make.
That's right. So
you know,
eventually, and that's kind of where I was going with that, is that eventually. Oh, I'm sorry.
No, I was going to say, and then we don't get to make our own kids. We're going to have perfect ones. So, you know, somebody else will tell us what
if
we get.
If you're not going to have a perfect child, and your child is going to be, your child is born with trisomy 13, which is Down syndrome, trisomy 18, which is not, generally is not survivable, you're going to have, you know, any multitude of different, you know, genetic defects or something, then we're going to have a state-mandated abortion. Because, after all, the state has a compelling governmental interest in the health and the productivity of the community.
Yep, they're paying for your health care, so now they're going to limit their costs and make sure that you bring healthy children into the world.
Hey, and so we've got to take one more quick break here. The state's not making us, though.
No.
No.
Are you sure?
No, I'm silencing you. It's all about me.
All right. Zip it.
Yeah, put your hood on a little tighter, honey.
Right.
We're going across the border. My mom's going to be so excited that I told that story. Oh, my gosh. You're listening to We the People Radio. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. We'll be right back.
Peace.
Blinded me with science.
Well, that was a great one.
Nobody's going to accuse us of that this morning. We just blinded them with our thoughts.
That's right.
Okay, just kind of a little funny side note. My sister, who had the windbreaker tied around her face, emailed me at exactly the moment we were talking about her, and I know she wasn't listening. What are the odds? I sent her a cartoon last night. It was pretty funny, actually. It says, "Want to freak out your neighbors? Name your Wi-Fi FBI surveillance van number 7.
Oh, my gosh. That's fantastic. Oh, gosh. I always wonder.
Okay,
you know,
how funny would that be?
Here.
People look at what networks are available nearby. FBI surveillance van 7? What?
Fantastic.
I mean, you could change it like every month. It'd be just, I don't know. Anyway, so now my neighbors are all going to know. Darn it. I blew my cover. Oh, my gosh. So Catherine, in the last, 5 minutes-ish, you know, we never talked about the Declaration. Oops. We went to great pains to get it listed on the website, and then we just totally ignored it. Tell people about the Declaration.
So I co-authored a Declaration of Independence from federal intrusion on local education. And so we did this last year for a couple of months. We worked on this before the 4th of July, and we did it for publishing on the 4th of July. It was a really great, fun project. But we did it because this is all about Common Core, and it's all based on Common Core. So there's a list of, you know, the intolerable acts. And we had listed them a mile long, these intolerable acts, at that time. And then we narrowed it down, of course, you know, to fit into our project for a Common Core for about, it's based around education.
Sure.
So, but essentially, it could be for anything. It is about federal intrusion. It's not really necessarily about education at all. It's about the usurpation of power. And the federal government and really any government, because this trickles, it trickles across to every level of government. They're all doing it.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we're seeing that they all will do, take these liberties and, you know, one at a time, and pretty soon you don't even really have local control. So we included the preamble of the original original Declaration of Independence, and then I just reaffirmed and published it again for this 4th of July. It's a big day for me, Independence Day. I've become a huge patriot, and I've always had my favorite song has always been the Star Spangled Banner, but I have lately, in the last couple of years, just really become very attached and very in love with my country and with our founders and with the history of our country and our with all our blemishes and, you know, scars and
sure,
and harshness and all of that, but all the wonderful things too that we didn't learn in school. And
isn't that the truth of it? I mean, look at all the. I think Obamacare was really the first bill that people, just in general, followed all the way through. I mean, people who didn't realize it was voted in both houses, and how things were conferenced together, and there's a lot of stuff we didn't learn and didn't care about.
That's right. And we don't learn. It's not, and I think, you know, people in general have a general idea about how, you know, government works, and here's what we do when we want to do this, and we if we don't like one of our lawmakers or legislators or government officials, we vote at the ballot. And actually, there's a whole nother world out there of not necessarily what we think we know. Actually, we have an idea of how it works, but we don't know how it's supposed to work.
Exactly.
And that's the problem. And so it's fascinating to me that we have something that was put in place that works so perfectly, and we have come to a place where our federal government is saying, it's
sit down and
stepping
shut up
over into areas where it doesn't belong, and we're saying, Can we have a little bit more of that?
So yeah. For those of you that that would like to participate, she has a Recall Pan, Senator Pan. So it's recallpan.com. That's also on the page. The declaration's on the page. All sorts of good stuff's on the page. So, Catherine, thank you for spending time with us.
Thank you.
We'll chat again.
What's that with that recall? We didn't talk much about that, but the Senator Pan recall is a big deal.
They can go read about it. Going to force them to do their own homework. Go read about the recall. All right, guys,
Absolutely.
We'll see you next week. We're talking about resource issues next week with Supervisor Ray Haupt. He's a smart dude. Thanks, Catherine. Bye, Bill.
Thank you, Aaron. Thank you, Bob.